We've got the board downstairs on the door, which I've called here Dedication of Merit. At Throstle it's called Transfer of Merit. At most temples actually, it says Transfer of Merit on it. The reason I didn't put it like that is because I feel that the phrase Transfer of Merit, although I acknowledge it doesn't necessarily mean this, to me it kind of conveys an almost commodification of merit. But I think the word transfer in particular conveys to me, and maybe that's just the way my brain works, there's this commodity called merit that somehow we generate, and somehow we generate a credit in our account at the Bank of Merit, and then we do an online transfer to transfer this merit to the merit account of someone else who's in need, and it ends up there, and they're benefited as a result. And I think probably a lot of people, although they might not admit to it, actually do see it kind of along those lines. Not that literally, but that kind of transactional type, direct and definite helping. And I think there are all sorts of issues with that, which I'll try and kind of mention some of them. So perhaps the next thing to ask is, well, what then is merit? If it isn't, and I think to see it as a tangible commodity type thing, I don't think that's helpful at all. I think it's much more, I think there's something real at the heart of this that started out, I would think, probably very simply, and in trying to talk about it to people, it's kind of got a bit codified in a way that makes it into this thing. Mm. I think the heart of it is, as I say, very simple, very straightforward. The practice that we do, there is benefit in it. There's benefit for us, there's benefit for other people that we come into contact with, just on the simple level that if I can act less with anger when an irritation arises, then that's good not just for me but for those around me. If I realise that in taking other people's property I steal my own peace of mind and refrain from doing that, then that benefits not just me but other people. That we act as much as we can in a way that's congenial and pleasant and doesn't cause suffering for others in all the things that we do. Again, it's a benefit for us, it's a benefit for work colleagues, family, friends, everyone. We do what we can to make this bit of the world that I'm responsible for, that I make that as much a, or as little a cause of suffering as I can. That's beneficial, and that comes through the practice. And so there is benefit. And I'm using the word benefit specifically to avoid saying merit. But of course, if you substitute one word for the other, the new word just takes on the baggage of the old one. If you're not careful, if you don't kind of reconfigure your brain, there's benefit in what we do. There's something beneficial in what we do. And I think that's what's being referred to as merit. Recognising that there is benefit in the practice. A straightforward observation. What we do is beneficial. Now, the idea of offering merit then really has its roots in the Bodhisattva vows to help all beings. How do we help all beings? Well, we want to offer whatever we have. And if we see that the practice is beneficial, that there is benefit that results from it, then that, as well as many other things, we offer. That's even if we don't have anything physical that we can offer, even if we don't have any money, any property, or anything else that we can offer, we can always offer the benefit of our practice. And I think another aspect of that, and perhaps why that became emphasised, is that aspect of the bodhisattva vows, a reminder that when we come to practice, when we sit in the meditation hall, when we engage with practice in whatever way, that it isn't just for us. So this idea of sharing the benefit, offering the benefit, is very much in harmony with the bodhisattva way of seeing life, training, practice. And so the idea of offering the merit of our practice is a, as I say, a reminder of that and a connection with that. And if we don't feel that as being real in our lives, a way of making that feel a bit more tangible and a bit more real, reminding us that it is so, that we practice not just for ourselves but for all beings. Now, another aspect of this is just the open-hearted connection with other people, other beings, that if beings are in difficult circumstances, we have an empathy response to that, and we want to do what we can. We want to offer. There's this open-hearted wish to offer whatever we can. I think it's probably a recognition of the fact that actually we can't do anything about so many situations, that the idea of offering merit, or offering, just making an open-hearted offering, and what can we offer? Well, the benefit of our practice, that's something we can always offer. So it's an open-hearted offering. And I think when that is our understanding of it, I think that's very good and that's very positive. It's a reminder that we're not separate from the rest of the world. It's a reminder of the bodhisattva path. It's a reminder of the paramita of giving. So as I say, I think you can understand where that all comes from and how it actually makes sense within the practice. The problem comes when you start, maybe without kind of talking 20 minutes about it, you just say dedication of merit or offering of merit, or even more so transfer of merit. Mm. If you haven't kind of gone through all of that background to explain what you actually mean by that, it's very easy to latch onto it as being some kind of transactional type thing. And I don't think that's the heart of it at all, and that's really why I've put dedication of merit. It's that offering, it's dedicating the merit, the benefit of what we do in that open-hearted way. And I think it's an acknowledgement of the interconnectedness. It's empathising with someone who is in a difficult situation, which we realise we ourselves could find ourselves in, whether that's illness, bereavement, an accident, death. Where I think this can get us into really difficult territory is if we even consider whether our offering of merit makes any difference to the person who, in quotes, is receiving it, or the person who we bear in mind. That's getting more into the transfer bit. An understanding that they do actually receive something or are benefited. I'm not saying they're not, but what I would say is that's not our business. It's our business to make the open-hearted offering. If we do have the idea that they are benefited from it, one difficulty is, well, what about the law of cause and effect? How does this actually fit in with that? On the law of karma, intention is the doer of karma, feeling is the reaper of karma. We each do our own practice and we receive the consequences of our actions, but not just in the law of karma, all the other ways the laws of consequent cause and effect work in the physical realm, the biological realm. Do we think that our bearing someone in mind and offering the merit of practice actually changes in some way the universe works, that we're just kind of, we're intervening in some way, which is essentially what magic purports to do. Like I say, to even start considering that, I think, is a wrong turn. Because how could it be anything other than speculation, really? And it isn't the important thing. My practice is to do my practice, and that's the offering. What happens then, if anything, the universe kind of sorts out. It's not for me to kind of figure out whether that has made a difference or does make a difference. If we go too far down this road of transfer of merit and are thinking that actually what we do does make a difference to someone, well, if we offer merit for someone who is terminally ill, does that mean we're wanting them to not die? Even if they do have remission in their illness, whatever it might be, we're all going to die at some point. However much merit we offer for whoever it might be that we value very much, even if lots of people offer merit over a protracted period, the person's still going to die eventually. That isn't really the most important bit of that. I think the most important bit of that is what are we doing trying to influence outcomes? What is actually the merit of what's the important thing in a sense? And it's not really that when someone is ill that they recover. It's that if what comes to them is illness and death, that they train as best they're able within what comes to them, because that will come to all of us at some point. So what when we were we to offer the merit of our practice for an outcome, how do we actually know what the best outcome would be for that person anyway? Is it always the what seems the obvious one, that they should get better? So that's why I say to even think about what the outcome of this might be, we get into all sorts of knots about your consequence, about what's actually a good outcome anyway, about you know, if we want to think of any outcome, then it's really that the person is able to train well within the circumstance they find themselves in. And I think if someone who is in a difficult situation knows that others are thinking of them, then just that may actually help their state of mind, may help their acceptance of the situation. But that comes through knowing that others are thinking of you. It doesn't actually come through some mechanism for merit being transferred from one place to another. It's that sense of the opening, of the connectedness, the opening of the heart. And I think for anyone who engages with it, as long as we don't get too mechanistic about it, or at least the mechanistic bit can be a distraction, but for anyone who engages with it, whether they are someone just offering the merit of their practice, whether it's someone asking for transfer of merit for someone else, or whether it's someone receiving, just to be part of that connection is to know that you're part of that interconnected web of humanity. And if you like, it's a way in which the Sangha expresses its togetherness. Because for me, the idea of abstract merit as a thing that could be accumulated just doesn't make sense. If you do something beneficial, it benefits someone in whatever way you do it, or you refrain from causing suffering, do something to help someone. That benefit naturally arises, but it's not something that... It happens in the moment. It's not like there's an abstract benefit or merit that's generated that you can kind of put in a jar and keep for later. It arises in the moment. And it arises inevitably and, you know, just as a result of doing it. And because someone is helped by a beneficial act or a beneficial thought or whatever it, well, you know, by doing something beneficial, we might not see exactly, especially if it's a beneficial thought, we might not see exactly how someone else is benefited by that, but thoughts lead to actions. We don't need to worry about that. But the thing to notice is that if it's beneficial, people are benefited without me needing to transfer it to anyone or offer it. How do you transfer merit? Well, it's in the nature of merit that it is transferred in the sense of shared, that it is others who benefit from it. The idea that you could do something beneficial but no one benefit from it is kind of doesn't make sense. I think even if we think it's something that only benefits me, well, actually, no, that isn't true, because we're all connected. And if we do something beneficial that's just for ourselves and become a better person and act better as a result of that, then others are benefited. And there's all sorts of pitfalls of doing that subconsciously and all sorts of stuff. But you know, if we just straightforwardly do our best to do our best. And I wouldn't actually, you know, I raised earlier, well, what about cause and effect? I wouldn't actually rule out that there are some things going on that actually we don't understand, and that actually that is within all of the law of cause and effect, and it's not subverting it. But the point is that that's not the thing to focus on as a practitioner or as a human being. It's just the open-hearted giving. And what does or doesn't happen as a result of that is beyond our, you know, we have to recognise what is our, what comes to us and what doesn't. Maybe just mention briefly, I think it's Richard Dawkins who, in one of his books, I think it's the God Delusion one, mentions a experiment, a trial that was done of two groups of people at a particular church praying for particular people. Well, they did this in a number of, you know, in a number of combinations. It's like a controlled trial type thing, and seeing whether the outcome for those who were prayed for was any different from the outcome for those who were not prayed for. And they did it with some who knew that they were being prayed for, some who didn't know they were being prayed for, and some who were told they were being prayed for but actually weren't being so surprised, but, you know, the whole double blind type thing. I can't remember all the details of it now, but I think that the people who were told they were being prayed for did better, but that was irrespective of whether they were actually being prayed for or not. I think it showed that there wasn't any evidence that there actually was a result from the actual praying for someone brought about a different result. But I think the reason I mention it is not to actually to rule something out, but just to say that if we start getting into that at all, I think we've gone in the wrong direction, and to demonstrate it one way or another, where it's not from the point of, from a practice point of view, that's not where it's at all. It's really, as we were saying, that sense of open-heartedness and connection, and that sense of, you know, just the human connection that we've been talking about, or the Sangha in operation. We live in a world of form, and having forms like that are very important in making, to some extent, tangible what otherwise might just kind of be forgotten or drift away. And so, yeah, we were talking about ceremonial, so you can describe a ceremony, and it doesn't really seem, you know, what does all that mean? It doesn't seem to really convey much. You're talking about bowing and what that means, it's just so many words. But when you actually bow, when you actually do the ceremony, there's something which is different to that is conveyed and experienced, which is real. And a lot of that, of course, is the intention. So I think where that leaves me is that we do have the board downstairs. I think it's a good thing to do, and also I do have mixed feelings about it, in the sense that it's just so easy to kind of get the wrong tack with it. Having said that, I'm not sure that too much damage is really done if we get the wrong tack with it, and if we are thinking of it mechanistically. I think if we carry on in practice, there will come a point where we just realise it doesn't make sense. And the good intention is there, and there will come a time when we have to kind of reappraise our understanding of it, and, well, what isn't that true for, and whatever our understanding of it is, there's probably always deeper to go.